Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, broadcast rambler, Sachs. You're a wordy fellow, my friend. Every once in a while, you get going, and you get that school for talking going on, and you ramble on real good.
And I will say, thank you. Honestly, I appreciate it. It's a very apt nickname for the final episode of Ether Drift. And I will say, I notice it when I edit that, like, the man loves to get the last word in. He loves to just be like, I do. I love to just
really
be like,
do.
I really do. And I
can't do it because you will go again. We will just go forever.
I know. I don't know what that impulse is where I'm like, and I will wrap this up in a neat little bow. It doesn't need to happen. Look, we're working, we're growing, we're self-evaluating. And today we're evaluating Ether Drift as a whole, as our time with it over the past, whatever, month and a half. And I'd say my experience is warm and positive, largely, with this format.
Yeah, I mean, gone too soon for me. I have not been able to play nearly as much as I would have liked. I have not been pushing the limit as much as I could have the last 2-3 weeks due to some work responsibilities at Band. But my classic line, I'm going to be less busy coming up in a week or two. Hashtag spring break, baby.
That's right. Before we got on the line, I was asking Ben, I was like, because he had quite a long day yesterday. And I was like, so what's going on next week? And you said, you're gonna make fun of me, but next week, less busy. So I'm going to hold you to it. Today, we are going to be sending off Ether Drift in Lords of Limited fashion. We've got 50 takes for you in 50 minutes. And I'm excited for, and this will segue us nicely into chatting about the Patreon page, but I'm excited for Lords Unlimited this week. We're going to be sort of doing like a two-parter with 50 takes and doing some more awards, because I felt like the Golden Egg Award and the Imperial Oath Award are just so perfect for this format. And I was like, I want more categories like that. I want to start getting more of those in. And maybe they'll make their way into 50 takes as well. But we'll be doing some more categories over on Lords Unlimited this week, which is a perk of the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. And the two perks that we really want to shout out are access to our Discord, which everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to. New set season right around the corner with Tarkir Dragonstorm. Going to start exploring spoilers. Once the full spoiler drops, we'll have practice drafts firing, people getting their tier lists or top commons and uncommons. And it's just a great way to start talking with like-minded limited individuals before the set drops. And the other thing we want to shout out via the Patreon is access to our podcast feed, where you get access to not only our main show a day early ad-free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. And you can try that out for like a 7-day free trial as well, if you want to see how that podcast feed fits into your life. And we also want to make sure we shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Cullen, Logan, Cole, and Gary. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. And if you're not even a new patron, maybe you're a new listener and you're wondering what the heck the Golden Egg Award is, stay tuned. You're going to find out.
We got you, fam. We got you. We also want to shout out, we've got a new merch store over at Dashery, which is powered by TeePublic. So you can go to lordsoflimited.com/merch if you want to check out our Lords of Limited gear. And yeah, Ben is sporting his Lords of Limited hoodie right now on YouTube. So we've got our Lords of Limited gear. We've got our Mad Magicians Against Data gear over there as well. If you want to scoop those up, if you're heading over to Denver, maybe for the Spotlight series that's limited in about a month, and you want to rep Lords of Limited, that's the place to do it. Okay, Ben, we did some dickering and dealing before getting on the line here. Anything else you want to chat about before we dive into these 50 takes?
No, let's get to it.
Well, I have to serve up number one right to you. This is just beautiful, beautiful poetry here in point number one. I gave it just a chef's kiss when I read it yesterday and opened the Google Doc. So why don't you kick us off here with point number one?
Wow, that means a lot. I don't contribute much in eloquency to the podcast. Episode titles are all Ethan's. I'm glowing right now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Number one, Etherdrift was billed in previews as too fast and too furious, but the vehicle set drove under the speed limit.
I mean, that's a great encapsulation of the format, I think. Like, it lets you know that it's about vehicles, obviously, but that it's not vroom vroom, pedal to the metal, super duper fast. Like, this is actually one of the slower formats we've seen in certainly the Play Booster era. And I feel like certainly just in our podcasting lifetime, this is definitely an exception and not the rule.
Yeah, I certainly think that is true. As far as like the last 3 or 4 years, common car miles or whatever, it turned a lot of that on its head. And the other thing I was thinking about this format, I don't know if we have a take about this or not, there are a lot of onboard tricks. It was complex, I think, as far as games going long and the boards being full of a lot of stuff because the games are going long. And there were things that could happen on board. I definitely chump attacked into creatures before, you know, accidentally. And I don't normally do that kind of stuff, but the boards got complex.
Yeah, not seeing like a creature can crew a vehicle that then can crew a larger vehicle. Those were the things that got me the most, was those crewing chains and being like, oh, dang, you do have access to a 6/6 on this board or whatever. And I just missed it. Number two, a slower format meant that stereotypical card evaluations in Limited for the past couple of years went by the wayside. These are two great examples here that you have of Nesting Bot and Beast Rider Vanguard, right? Like Nesting Bot, what was 2023 was like the year of the one drop. Nesting Bot looks like a great one drop, gets your engine started early. White wasn't really that aggressive, and this wasn't that good of a card and not that good of a payoff for starting your engines. Beast Rider Vanguard is another like flip side of that, right?
Sure, yeah. 2 mana, 2/2, an activated ability for 5 mana to look at the top 3 cards of your library, reveal a permanent from among them and put it into your hand. During card eval season, if you had told me I would value Beast Rider Vanguard ahead of Nesting Bot, I would have laughed in your face and told you were insane.
Well, I even remember both of us, I was definitely sheepish about it. It was post early access event, pre getting our hands on the cards. And I was like, I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but Beast Rider Vanguard was kind of a problem for me on the other side of the battlefield, fully expecting you to be like, you're crazy, that card's terrible. But then you were like, nah, I also got to agree that card was kind of a problem for me too. And that I feel like gave us even a hint of what was to come in the coming weeks of us figuring out the format. I also feel like Spin Out belongs on this list. Like if you had told me the murder variant, like when was the last time a murder variant was like, oh wow, this is really premium stuff at common. It just hasn't happened in a while.
It's been a long time. And I think it was cool. I think seeing that happen in the format and getting to reevaluate cards and plan to play longer games of Magic and not necessarily feeling like you needed to build your deck to get on board and attack and pressure the opponent. The fact that you could actively play defense and splish splash around a little bit, all that stuff was cool. Number three, green was the quote best color in the format, thanks to a deep roster of commons with great stats. And I don't mean 17 lands.
Yeah, I feel like Hazard of the Dunes and Migrating Ketrodon sort of defined the rules of engagement in the format in many ways for me. Like, once you were sort of talking about that from Sealed of like, you got to have a way to deal with those cards in Sealed, I was like, oh, you also just have to have a way to deal with those cards in Draft too. Like, you're going to face green decks and green decks are going to have those cards. And once I wrapped my head around that and had that as a framework for drafting, a lot of stuff clicked into place for me. So those two cards, I feel like really are pillars of the set in that way.
Yeah, Stampeding Scurryfoot as well. The 1 mana 1/1 mm-hmm. that you can then exhaust to turn it into a 2/2 and bring a 3/3 elephant along with it. Green had great commons, and I think that was a large part of its success. And it was cool to see. I do still think uncommons are the driving force in play boosters, but it was cool to see commons mattering a lot, especially in certain colors.
Number four, because of green's deep commons, the green decks all tended to play out with similar game plans. Yeah, green wasn't a support color in a lot of decks, right? I mean, it could be
in any. No.
Well, I mean, I think you could have had like a heavy blue deck, but then you're playing the Ranger's Aether Hive and the Sky Serpent Seekers. But you're right. Like most green decks were heavy green. And that's because if green was open, you're getting all those commons and green just like out-commoned any other color.
Correct. Like you just cast the cards and they're better than the other colors' cards. And then you win with the cards that are better than the other colors' cards.
Yeah.
Number five. Non-green decks needed ways to deal with six sixes, which often came in the form of vehicles.
Yeah. Broadcast Rambler, again, like, sort of stupid, but once I realized, one, that this card is me, but also, two, that this card is a 5-4 plus a 1-1, and that can tussle with Ketrodon, that's big game.
Yeah, and stuff like Apocalypse Runner trades with it on face value. Marshall's Path Cruiser took me way too long to warm up to in the format. This 3-mana artifact, 6/5 vehicle with a crew cost of 5. Like, normally that would just be a crew cost that was exorbitant and would price it out of being a playable card. But again, this isn't, you know, your grandpa's format or whatever. This is like different, some different magic. Or maybe it is your grandpa's format and not your dad's format or something. I don't know. This is a throwback to a slower era of magic. I don't know what I'm trying to say there.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. But realizing that those cards, just like keyword large, we'll talk about Tarion a little later in the episode, but just keyword large mattered in the format. Have like, that's what you mean when you're talking about stats. You're talking about like power and toughness for mana cost. And green gave that in droves. And you had to be able to not fold to that on the other side of the battlefield.
Also cool to see green get that, because it doesn't often feel substantially larger, despite that being its intrinsic color trait. So good for green.
That's a really good point. Number six, attacking was difficult in the format if you didn't have a plan for how to do it. The narrative for the format was board stalls, but I'm not sure that that was what the format was offering and perhaps how people were engaging with it instead.
Yeah, Ethan's sugarcoating my point here. I said I think shoddy deck building on people's parts and or... There was a point in the format where green was open, and if you were probably in that era of the format, that 2-week stretch or whatever it was, if you were drafting green decks and you were playing against green decks, it is hard to avoid board stalls in the green on green matchups unless you're specifically already anticipating that and coming with stuff, you know, that's going to help you attack into a clogged board. But if you drafted other decks, specifically Grixis, you would play against those green decks, but the board didn't necessarily stall out. You either won through more synergistic stuff than what the green decks were doing, or the green decks smashed you in with larger things than what you had going on because your synergies didn't pop off. But I don't think that you should go back to the format thinking, well, every game is going to be a board stall. Maybe if green's open and everybody's drafting green, stuff can end up that way. But then you also should bring some stuff to the fight with your deck that is going to help you punch through a board stall. I don't think it has to be that way. Number seven, black was not far behind green in the color power rankings, and maybe even ahead, depending on who you talk to.
Were you talking to me?
I was talking to you, yeah. I mean, if you listen to Lords of Limited, I think you would have black ahead of green, potentially. But truly, I think if all things being equal and green's wide open, it probably is the best color. But I don't know, black's really close, and I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to do in the colors that are not green.
Yeah, so Wreckage Wickerfolk, Spin Out, Pactol Terror. These aren't like the chonky donkers that green gets as their top commons, but they're also darn good and synergistic and play in the artifact space. Wreckage Wickerfolk was so good at enabling getting you to max speed once your engine started. Pactol Terror was a game plan in and of itself in some decks. Spin Out was great removal. Like, black did a lot of really good stuff at common too.
Yeah, Wreckage Wickerfolk was outstanding. It felt like that movie title, what was it, Everything Everywhere All at Once? Like, it just did so much for every archetype. It was an artifact. It surveilled stuff for black-green, black-red, cared about the flyer, the start your engines. Maybe other decks took advantage of that as well. Wreckage Wickerfolk was a beaut.
Number eight, white was disrespected for most of the format's life cycle, but it was definitely viable to draft, especially as the format matured.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things for me was once I realized white was good and fine to go into, it opened up even more paths through the draft for me and what I already viewed as an interesting, complex draft format. And I think just the sheer splashability of all of white's cards, like there was a point, and I don't know if it still is, again, like I said, I haven't been able to play much, but there was a point where you were getting just egregiously powerful white cards 5th through 8th pick, because in the first 2 weeks of the format, the narrative from content creators had been, don't be white, white's terrible. And a lot of people never course corrected from that. And I think that was a lot of equity scooped up near the end of the format. And I think even if this format came back, I would feel fine going into white because I feel like I understand how to draft white. A lot of the pitfalls of white was viewing it as an aggressive color and playing a nesting bot or something. And nesting bot is basically a blank piece of cardboard in this format. And so avoiding those types of cards and playing bigger white decks, you know, with your broadcast ramblers and whatnot, I think it was really cool. Number nine, blue didn't have great commons, but it was super deep at uncommon.
Yeah, I feel like I owe blue an apology because I was kind of pooping on it earlier in the set. And you were like, no, the uncommons are really good. You're like, you're right. And we'll talk about it when we get to top commons. Like, blue's commons are real stinky, pretty much. Like, there's role players there, but there's nothing to be excited about, nothing to hook you in as far as I can see. But blue's uncommons are incredible. Spikeshell Harrier, still my vote for best uncommon in the whole set. I'm obsessed with this card. But, like, you get Stock Up. You get Ranger's Refueler, which we are going to have nicknames for later in the episode. You get Transit Mage, which has tons of really sweet things that can go search up. Like, and that's not all of them. Like, half of Blue's Uncommons are noteworthy.
Yeah, Blue's Uncommons were my favorite place to be in the format as well. And even some of those more niche, like Kalorna, like, when you fit that into a deck that wanted a 2-mana 0/8, that's really powerful if that supports your game plan for your archetype.
What's the name of the 1/3 that max speed, you get to copy a spell if you sacrifice it?
I don't know. That was the only clunker.
I know it was, but man, I love chasing that dream. Number 10, because of color imbalance, the format went through three separate phases. Early, force green, white is terrible.
Yeah, that was about the first 2 weeks of the format. And then after that, in the middle of the format, Grixis and Start Your Engines was wide open. And that was where I lived for almost the entire format, probably incorrectly. I probably should have drafted green more in the beginning. But once I hit that phase where green was contested and Grixis was open, who cares about green?
I know that's the thing. And I know this is our bit, whatever, like, you and I don't know what it is. Like, why do we always underrate green? I can't, like, I'm just, like, too stupid to understand that a 4-mana 4/4 is good, but only sometimes, because sometimes it's not good, but sometimes it is really good. Like, I don't know. I can't figure it out. I can't do the math. But I did basically just, like, I saw how good green was, but kind of from afar, you know? Like, I was like, I guess I understand that that's good for you. But for me, I will be starting my engines and drafting Rakdos all the time. And so for me, there were basically only two stages. Like, I lived in that middle stage as well early, and then late, it was like, oh, I mean, a sort of combo of, oh, push the limits nuts and you can always get it, slash white is also significantly underrated. So draft white, like, oh, Ride's End is nuts. Let's just draft a bunch of those and then get some win conditions.
My favorite part of the Lords of Limited Discord the past 2 weeks when I haven't been able to play has just been scrolling through push the limit deck after push the limit deck after push the limit deck and getting tagged in, like, ah, drafted push the limit. What are the cuts here? No. Like, hope people had fun with push the limit because it is a beautiful way to win a game of Magic.
For sure. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Magic players love stats, so let's talk numbers. Traditional in-person therapy can cost anywhere from $100 to $250 per session, which adds up fast. But with BetterHelp online therapy, you can save on average up to 50% per session.
With BetterHelp, you pay a flat fee for weekly sessions, saving you big on costs, like when the stonks are up in the arena store and there's a draft token on sale. So much value.
Therapy should feel accessible, not like a luxury. With online therapy, you get quality care at a price that makes sense and can help you with anything from anxiety to everyday stress.
It's also nice to have a confidant to talk to, bounce ideas off of, and problem solve with. Your mental health is worth it, and now it's within reach.
With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people globally.
It's convenient, too. You can join a session with the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life.
Your well-being is worth it. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. Number 11, speaking of beauty, Start Your Engines played out beautifully as a mechanic that really rewarded you for getting in a 1-2 punch the turn that you started it.
I also think it was savagely underrated for most slash the entirety of the format, and maybe not underrated, but certainly misunderstood, I would say.
had drafted poorly, and or like, I think, you know, LR listeners out there, LR poo-pooed this most of the format. Like 1 week they did like a Rakdos Start Your Engines episode, but frequently every other week Marshall would say like, yeah, the Start Your Engines payoffs just don't quite get there. You know, it's a slower format. They couldn't push the mechanic that much, had to be careful with the dials, that sort of thing. And I think probably some portion of the online players listens to only LR and not us. And so maybe that, you know, impacted things a little bit, but I loved Start Your Engines. I thought it was, for me, the cleanest mechanic and really rewarded tight drafting and tight deck building for how you had a plan to do it. And then making sure that the payoffs like Risen Necro Regent or Enriser Spike Spitter or whatever you want to call it came down and were on. Like if those just said, if they didn't start your engines, I think people would have built decks better. If they just said, if you have max speed, do X. Because then people would have, I think, done things correctly.
Right. Well, because you also had, there was some reading between the lines of, okay, I've got things that start the engines that I want to do that early if possible, because I've got my whatever, Risen Necro Regent, or I've got my Hour of Victory, the things that I want to turn on. But then the interstitials of like, do I want this 1-3 flyer now? Like, does Skystreak Engineer, a card that is normally not something I might want to fit into a deck, but now that goes up because I'm trying to start my engines. Or there were times where like, you just didn't quite get there on the start your engine stuff. And then you had to realize, I actually need to just cut these cards and add other things that work on their own instead. All of that deck building stuff, you're right about. And I just want to shout out that not only were the big payoffs like Hour of Victory or Risen Necro Regent good, but like turning Surveyors into actual 2-for-1s was great. Getting 2 extra mana from Endrider Catalyzer, there's stuff to do with your mana. Giving Lifelink to Streaking Oil Gorger, all that stuff also mattered. And I think it was really overlooked. I think it was just sort of like, eh, it's just this one thing that gets better. But it's like, nah, it's like 8 things in your deck that get better. And one of them is Grave Titan. So like, maybe it is actually worth thinking about and building around.
Well, and I think my biggest leak as a Magic player is not just playing Hazard of the Dunes. Like, that is an intrinsically powerful card and that I should cast it and attack with it because that is good. Like, I want to assemble more things to get my power, and Start Your Engines offered that, I think, in a way that, if done properly, exceeded Green's just base good status. But it was a lot of work to do, and you had to put all the cogs in the right places. And if you didn't, the punishment was you got trounced by Green decks. But if you could do all of that, I think you could exceed the power level of Green. And that sort of thing is naturally very appealing to me as a Magic player. The other cool thing about Start Your Engines, having played a lot of Sealed in this format, incidental Start Your Engines mattered in Sealed. Like, I was way more willing to run the off-color lands, like the rummaging land that started your engines, or, you know, one Surveyor, and then turning that into a 2-for-1 later in the game in Sealed mattered. So all of that was cool, I think, in Sealed. It had a bit of a different feel over there, which was nice.
Number 12, Exhaust was a great late game mana sink in a format that could / would get to the late game.
Yeah, I mean, everything is kicker, but Exhaust is a great variant on kicker. I think one of the things that I didn't appreciate about Exhaust while Green was all the rage was, Green also was synergistic in the Exhaust space. Like, Scurryfoot, in addition to being a good card, is just very explosively synergistic once you get the Exhaust payoffs around it.
Well, one of the things I think I didn't appreciate or just missed in the early stages of the format / preview season was, I was basically thinking it was that Exhaust was adapt. But so much of the Exhaust stuff, I mean, sure, like Hazard of the Dunes, the counters just go on the creature and you can respond to that, you know, trigger going on the stack. But a lot of the stuff like Scurryfoot, like, you're getting your 3/3 if you exhaust it. Ranger's Refueler, you're drawing your card, you know, like things that you couldn't really mess with it in that sense, which I think was good for the mechanic.
Yes. Number 13, vehicles are generally not great cards, but I think Wizards of the Coast made them, I think, largely playable without pushing them too much. Like, that's a hard needle to thread there, where they're playable yet not busted. And I think they did that really well. Broadcast Rambler, Thundering Brood Wagon, all that sort of stuff. It just laid in a really nice place. And I, despite thinking, you know, well, vehicles aren't great, I'm probably not going to play a lot of vehicles in the vehicle format, I played more than my fair share of vehicles this format.
Yes. Well, I think Pilot Tokens helped that out, something like Guidelight Matrix. Like, there were also hidden tools to make things that would normally be like crew three, crew four seem impossible actually was quite doable. But also the back to the rules of engagement of like, you got to deal with six sixes, those sort of middle of the road, clunkier looking ones actually really played out nicely when like your Clamorous Ironclad has six power or your Apocalypse Runner has six power and can trade with those six sixes from green. That also like folded into why the vehicles were so good.
And I'm sure we're going to talk about Push the Limit a lot, but mm-hmm. also very cool that there was a build around that rewarded you for jamming a bunch of like 10th, 11th, 12th pick vehicles in a deck and making them actively great.
Yeah. Number 14, although Aether Drift was a two-color format, lots of the mechanics lived in wedges and shards. Probably your favorite was the Esper Artifact Wedge.
For sure. And largely, honestly, most of my artifact decks were blue-black. I didn't get to do much white because I was playing too much of the format when I was avoiding white. But I do think, yeah, certainly Esper Soup or like four-color non-green artifact soup, great place to be. Starcher Engines really lived in the Mardu space. And I think specifically black-red was the best of those, but white-black certainly could be doing Starcher Engines. And a lot of times you did want to splash in the format too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that also Rakdos then bled into blue, really had a lot of good, certainly ways to enable Starcher Engines with flyers, but also some nice payoffs as well. And then lastly, there's Exhaust living in the teamer space.
Number 15, because Aether Drift was slower, splashing was often possible, but you did have to prioritize fixing.
Yeah, and there was a good amount of it. Night Market, one of my favorite commons in the set, was great, plus the cycle of gain lands at whatever, air quotes, common, not quite common.
Yeah, things like Starting Column, the 3-mana artifact rock that could tap for mana of any color, Velaheart Bike, green-specific fixer to tap for mana of any color that was also a vehicle. Did you feel like in the format, if you wanted to splash, you were going to be able to?
Most of the time. There were definitely times where like I wanted to and then never quite got there, but I feel like most of the time I was able to if I wanted to. How about you?
Fixing felt tight for me. I felt closer to 50-50 about it. Like if I picked up something in pack one that I knew I wanted to splash, usually I could get there. But if you were like mid pack two, or you know, you picked up a thing in pack three or whatever, it wasn't so much fixing flowing around that it was easy to get there. I felt like you had to make a concerted effort to make a splash successful.
For sure. Number 16, the official Lords of Limited top commons of each color. In white, all hail Ride's End.
Easy, baby. In blue, blue's commons are horrendous. I was looking at this when I was working on the show notes, and I was like, wow, I played so much blue in this format, and its commons are so bad. I think it's Bounce Off, but I'm not even sure if that's true.
It could be. I watched, I think it was Lola's day two, draft two for the Arena Open. He pack one, pick one, Bounce Off. Ended up with three of them in his deck. I was like, I'm not on this level yet, but this is some amazing stuff. I almost wanted to give it to Keen Buccaneer, but I think we have to give it to Bounce Off.
I like Keen Buccaneer. That was what I initially had. And I was like, it can't be.
No, I think. I think it is Bounce Off.
And the other one I really liked was the 2-mana artifact that could tap for a blue. But again, that's niche. Optimizer. Like it can't be the best common if you're not playing in half blues decks or whatever, you know?
Right. In black, we've got Wreckage, Wicker Folk, as you said, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
In red, Thunderhead Gunner. 4 in red, 4/5 reach, and then every turn you could discard a card to draw a card. You just only drew gas. While there was a Thunderhead Gunner on the battlefield.
Only drew gas and couldn't be attacked because you just had this massive thing with reach. Like, it was so, like, that warm, fuzzy feeling where, because there's times where you tap out for Gunner, and then your opponent jams into it anyway, and you're like, ah, dang it. Like, all right, what tricks are there? Like, can I afford to wait a turn? Do I have to block into this? But if they just pass through combat that turn and you get to untap, you're just like, how do I lose?
How do I lose? Well, and thinking back to turning Cardevals on their head, if I told you pre-format that you were going to have Thunderhead Gunner as the top common ahead of Lightning Strike, like, it's just no world where you can imagine that, right?
No, no world. And in green, we've got Hazard of the Dunes.
Yeah, love that. Number 17. Speaking of commons, some of them really mattered in a format in the Playbooster era, which was, I think, refreshing. And like I said earlier, I think uncommons still drove the narrative. You started your draft with rares and uncommons, but green and black, especially getting deep commons, was cool. I think it was a unique twist on the uncommons mattering type thing in the playbooster era that I really appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Thunderhead Gunner also being like splash worthy, non-removal common, that's crazy. Like a card of that power level that any deck might seek out, we don't get that at common that much, unless it's removal.
Yeah, it really did feel like green and black's commons versus Grixis and White's uncommons. Like that, and I think when you assembled those uncommons, they could take down the green menace at common, but you really did have to do it in the right way.
Number 18, removal was great, but also kind of hard to come by because games went longer and you needed to be able to answer your opponent's best cards or remove a migrating Ketrodon. That's the narrative we're going to keep coming back to. How do you tussle with a 6-mana 6/6 in the format? Do you have 6 power yourself, or do you have something to kill it? I mean, stuff like, I feel like I have a point later to talk about these, but having Crash and Burn and Siphon Fuel as what look like pretty clunky removal spells as just like, yeah, but they get the job done. And sometimes you don't have other cards that get the job done in that way, and you'll put those in your deck.
Yeah, if the games go long, you just have to have ways to interact. And if you don't have ways to interact, then you're definitely going to experience what could be a board stally nature of the format, for sure. I think the other note about removal is some of the stuff that dealt with smaller creatures, like the Grim Baubles of the world, the Lightning Strikes of the world. If you're coming back, less good than you would think, just looking at how efficient the cards look. Number 19, Aetherdrift really rewarded you for reading what was open in your seat. I think all of the decks were competitive if you read what was open for your seat and then built correctly.
I know I've talked about this a lot during this format, but I really hate taking gold cards early in this format for this reason. I just feel like it closes you off. I'm fine to get deep into a color. I'm also fine to just like do a lot of take what I think the best card is out of each pack and tie those together with some starting Collins and some gain lands. But those are distinct paths in the draft. And I feel like I was much more interested in reading what was open than I was in like trying to stake my claim in an archetype or a deck.
For sure.
Number 20, speaking of building decks right, Aetherdrift archetypes were not intuitive to figure out and build initially thanks to a slower format. And the biggest example of this is that white wasn't really that aggressive. Like the best white decks were big white decks leveraging cheap Ride's Ends and big Broadcast Ramblers.
Yeah, that was, I think, a big level up for me a few weeks into the format. And I think also, once I pegged Migrating Ketrodon and Hazard of the Dunes as linchpins of the format, just knowing that I had to come expecting to fight those cards and having a plan to win that fight. Number 21, certain combat tricks also stood out as ways to attack into large green creatures. Specifically, I think the best of them, Maximum Overdrive. Like, again, if you told me going into the format that I would value this, I think I would have told you you were crazy. It's one in a black, put a +1/+1 counter on something, make it indestructible and give it Death Touch. And then Bestow Greatness also could let you attack into green things. That's the 3-mana +4/+4 trample trick. But also, if you are the black green deck with the large monsters, gives you ways to attack your opponent. And then when you try to double block, you can savagely blow them out. Both of these tricks were excellent.
Right. Death Touch from Maximum Overdrive in conjunction with trample was huge. And vice versa with, you know, sometimes Bestow Greatness giving, you know, your opponent thinks they're trading off with your Engine Rat or your Venomsack Lagak, and all of a sudden Bestow Greatness means nope, and I'm trampling over for 4 as well. Number 22, the official Lords of Limited archetype power rankings. Number 1, green black, affectionately known as graveyard stuff.
Except it actually got there this time. Number 2, blue black artifacts.
Number 3, red black start your engines.
Number 4, blue red discard.
Number 5, big white decks.
Number 6, 4-color, no green.
Number 7, green late game soup.
And number 8, green red beets.
No blue green on this list. Does blue green get lumped into one
of these?
I
think that's green late game soup, yeah. Blue green to me is green late game soup.
Yeah.
Number 23, top 5 uncommon imitators. Stock up, just better dig through time.
It's just better dig through time, not even dig through time at home.
Dig through time with no work.
Dig through time with no work. That's true. Number two, trade the helm. That's build your own mind control, baby.
Rangers refueler. Sorrel's pack made at home.
Oof, so good. Risen Necro Regent. This is my favorite. That's Grave Titan.
And Grease Ranch Goblin. Fable of the Mirror Breaker.
Except it kind of wasn't, right? Grease Ranch Goblin. Where are we at on this card at the end of the day?
I've been lower on it than you all format. So if you want to come down to the mud with me, I am welcoming you in. I feel like you've been too high on this card all format.
I think you're right. I think you are correct about that evaluation. I had two of them in a deck. I forget what kind of a deck it was, but I sided them out almost every match. And I was like, it was at the end of that there, I was like, maybe this doesn't do quite enough.
What is the one in a red, discard a card, draw two?
Three words, starts with an S, maybe? Am I even close?
No,
you're not. Two words?
Two words, starts with a K. Kickoff celebrations.
Yeah. And ends in an S. kick off celebrations. That's kind of three words.
It's not close to anything you were describing. You get negative points for being sort of confident about your description.
I award you no points and make God have mercy on your soul. Okay.
Yeah, Grease Wrench Goblin it's kind of like a more expensive kickoff celebrations, which is the discard a card, draw two cards. The body was just so, I don't want to say irrelevant, because there were some times where my opponent played turn one Grease Wrench Goblin, and I was like, oh, I kept kind of a slow hand. That thing's going to do six damage to me and then make sure my opponent has gas. It is a good card. The body just could be blanked, and then felt like Thunderhead Gunner is miles better than Grease Wrench Goblin.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that I think sums up where Grease Wrench Goblin is at. And I think, again, going into the format, if you'd have told us that, we'd have told you were crazy.
Number 24, Tarion World Tyrant is, in fact, huge. Shout out to me.
Shout out to you. Can't argue with it. And a shout out to you also. Getting it with Fang Druid Summoner was quite good.
Yeah. I mean, getting to either just tutor it up as turn four Summoner into turn five Terry, or if Terry, your opponent somehow managed to, maybe they just had a spot removal spell for it. Maybe they used their maximum overdrive to trade in combat with it. And then you just go, cool, get it back. The fact that Fang Druid Summoner could get the stuff out of the graveyard as well was huge.
Number 25, that whole cycle of uncommon vanilla creatures was excellent for card evaluation and the format in general. I think one of the most interesting pieces of the format.
Yeah, we could almost do a power ranking, except like it's clearly Terry, and then the other ones are just kind of cool. I think the 08 Kalorna would be my vote for the second best one.
Yeah, and then I think this probably the white 3/3.
Yes.
Because it's an artifact, and then black, mm-hmm. and then red. I think there's a clear power rankings, but all of them were interesting, and I played all of them.
Well, and the cool thing about, again, the 7/2 being able to tussle with the 9/7 perfectly, that was a nice, like, you know, foil to Tarion. But also, the format was slower, and so a 2-mana 4/1 was actually good, because you could threaten to trade with Hazard of the Dunes. And sure, maybe you'll take some trample damage, but when your 2-drop can do that, that's really good for getting to the late game. Number 26, Aether Drift had not one, but two Zenith Flares. The first one, with which we thought early on, was Haunt the Network. But oh no, there was another.
There was another. Push the Limit. This is one of the most fun cards we've had for Limited in a long time. I think because it checked a couple boxes that you would want for a build around, which is absolute garbage if you don't build around it, right? Like, which means that people aren't randomly going to pick it highly, right? Like Roost of Drakes from whatever, Zendikar. Or whatever. Like, that was just a great card. And like technically build around D, but just a great card. Push the Limit is truly atrocious if you don't build around it. And then the pieces that go with it, most of them also not high picks. So you can reliably get most of them. You probably had to spend some picks on the 6/3 that had cycling one, because, you know, blue-red cycling one of that. That was a desirable card for some other archetypes. But those two boxes, along with actually good, like truly competitive, I think, in a way that a lot of build arounds of this ilk are not. Like, usually this is Mimi and you're hoping to 2/1. I would expect to 3-0 with a good Push the Limit deck.
Right. It's like, it's not only is it like, no, it's actually good. It's no, actually the best versions of Push the Limit decks are the best decks you can draft in the format. I believe that. Like, you just feel like you're playing a completely different game. Your opponent's like trying to play checkers with you, and you get to play chess.
Yeah, it truly is Zenith Flare X in that you like do nothing, kind of survive. Maybe you're at four or whatever, you take some damage, and then you just win. Like, there is no stopping it. There's not a counter spell in the format, really. Like, you're hoping to not get Gastel Raidered or whatever that card is called,
right?
Like the Tuna Black 2/1 that can pull an instant or sorcery. That's the biggest counterplay to Push the Limit. But shout out to Haunt the Network, my boy. I cast a lot of Haunt the Networks. Love that card. You're still a Zenith Flare in my heart.
Well, and it pairs so well with the card in our next point.
Number 27, Pact All Terror, insane in multiples, and made the all-in artifact decks legit in the format.
And also just kind of perfectly statted, too. Like, this could have easily been a 2-3, could have been a 2-4. Like, 3-4 was really nice. A nice spot on the curve for that. And the fact that it triggered on itself, the fact that it gave you a way to interact with Start Your Engines without tussling in combat, it being extra two drain on your Haunt the Network. I mean, that was my early experience with this card in the format, was like multiple Pact All Terrors and Haunt the Networks. And again, just winning games I have no business winning because this just combats your opponent on a different axis.
And cool that it's such a powerful card for all of the black decks that aren't black green. Like, green black didn't really want this, but the other three black decks all really wanted it.
Yeah. Number 28, having ways to deal with non-vehicle artifacts in your deck was a must. It felt so bad randomly losing to River Churn Monument or Perilous Snare. And so, like, we'll talk about it a little later on, but cards like Broken Wings actually main deckable. And wanting to have access to something like Collision Course or Aether Jacket or whatever, Sky Crash, the cycling shatter effect. You just really wanted to make sure you had something like that in your deck.
For sure. Number 29. Speaking of, Mill was a real win condition in this format with River Churn Monument and Aether Siphon, just plus the games going long. I don't know about you. I crossed off my Mill WinCon achievement this format. Did you?
I definitely crossed off my Mill WinCon achievement. But also, like, did you not get to parts in the game where, like, I know you didn't really board stall a lot, but I definitely had games where I'd be like, I have 8 cards in my library, my opponent has 9 cards in their library. I'm just going to deck. Like, I can't close in 8 turns, and I'm going to deck first. Like, natural decking happened, as well as Aether Siphon and Monument being WinCons.
I agree. I was usually on the winning end of natural decking, though, I think, happened to me.
You hate drawing cards, so you were never ahead of the decking race?
No, I put better cards in my decks than my opponent, so I didn't need to go through air to get the board just to blast and then win.
Must be nice.
Say better deck building, thank you very much, than my opponents.
Number 30, 2-mana 2/2s are poorly positioned in the format. You can't attack through 1/3s. You die to Grimbauble. The format's slow. They're just not great cards.
Not great cards. Agreed. Number 31, Grimbauble and Lightning Strike were early frontrunners for top commons in preview season that fell short, I would say pretty drastically, of our expectations, but yet somehow also are still pretty good. Like, you're never cutting them, but some matchup, that's not true. Grimbauble you cut. Lightning
you're
Strike...
Never... I think the first copy makes your deck always. It's where does copies 2 or 3 come into your pick order and to your deck building? That for sure happens. And in sideboarding, you might side out the first copy as well, depending on what you're playing against and what the games are like.
Yeah, Grimbauble just has such a wide range. If you're playing against a non-green deck, it's incredible. And if you're playing against a green deck, it's largely bad, unless you happen to get Scurryfoot before they get to exhaust mana, in which case you're like, thank God, like, I found a target for my Grimbauble.
Well, and then there's the synergy part of it too. Like, are you running a bunch of Pact All Terrors? Well, then Grimbaubles get better. Do you have Trade the Helms or whatever was it? Hellish Sideswipe, like things that want that rectangle on the battlefield. Yeah, sure. Then Grimbauble goes up. But I think, again, that's all That's all cool for the format for me, that like those cards that seemed obviously great were not. Number 32, Howler's Heavy was great both with and against the Death Touch creatures in the format. Like,
I got absolutely savaged by Howler's Heavy in my match against Eduardo in that sealed PTQ thing.
Oh, really?
He was absolutely bodied. He was blue-green and had Legax. I just like was blocking and he'd Howler's Heavy. And like, once you know your opponent has it, like, it's so hard to play against that card. And early on in the format, I was crushing Engine Rats with Howler's Heavies. I was living my best life. I love Howler's Heavy as a card. I think it was just a really cool addition to the format. Number 33, Chunky Vehicles were great in non-green decks. And as a result, so was Guideline Matrix.
That's only possible because the format is slower. Like having the ability to say, yeah, this 2-mana cantrip, I can afford to put in my deck because it's going to give me a way to crew. I don't need crew 3 for my Clamorous Ironclad. I don't need crew 5 for my Marshall's Path Cruiser. I just have 2-mana and I can get the job done too. Number 34, said it before, I'll say it again. Broken Wings was actually main deckable in this format. Just full stop.
And maybe multiple copies? Like,
yeah, that's wild to me. Because that's like a question we've had in the Crash Course like so many times where we'll be like, do we think, oh, it's the enchantment set. Do we think Naturalize is going to be main deckable? And we always end up on the answer is no. And then this one is just, again, the exception to the rule. Broken Wings, get in.
Number 35, because of the hate for white most of the format, the sweepers were also massively underrated. You could get Explosive Getaway and Spectacular Pileup spectacularly late.
Yes, and they were great. And Explosive Getaway, sure, sometimes they had stuff bigger than 4 toughness. But when you got to do the like the time wipe thing where you like pick up your... save your thing, wrath your board, get my thing back. Maybe my thing has an ETB. My favorite thing to do with Explosive Getaway was blank Guideline Matrix just for funsies. Like, let me get my, I'll just draw a card again and wrath the board. Yeah, the wraths were great.
Well, safety tip with Explosive Getaway also saw this in our Discord. If you kill the creature that the opponent is trying to blink out from under the Explosive Getaway, it fizzles the whole spell. So mm-hmm. there was like a thread of discourse about that in our Discord. And then also saw the follow up to that, which was somebody posting like a screenshot of them blowing out their opponent's Explosive Getaway and was like, hey, don't think I would have won this game without this discussion on Explosive Getaway, which was really
cool. Yes, love to see that. Number 36, the speed of the format meant that the cycle of surveyors got to realize their potential. And I say this is pretty easy, but we'll do a little official power rankings for the surveyors.
Yeah, black number one by a lot. A lot.
This was the fact that, so this came down on turn 3, and then on turn 4, if you hit your land drop, it was attacking as a threatening 4/5.
Just unblockable.
It was unblockable. And like late in the game was ridiculous. The wombo combo of this with Apocalypse Runner, giving it unblockable and lifelink and then pumping it afterwards. So sick.
Wild also that this is so good and still probably isn't in black's whatever top 4-3 commons. Like it's really strong.
Right. It's below. I would have it below Wickerfolk, Pact All Terror, Spin Out and Grim Bauble personally.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's still so. Excellent. Number 2, red, 3/2 trample was really nice. This was often able to, I think, get in that upping the speed because of trample. If your opponent wanted to trade off with it, you still got it and then get to draw a card off of it later in the game.
Blue, number 3, the 2/2 flyer.
I think so. I almost put green here, but blue, the fact that this was evasive and in a color that had more start your engine stuff, I felt like blue should go 3, but I could see green being number 3. What do you think?
I like green at number 3, and I think that you've underrated that card most of the format.
I think that's true. That's why, as a nod, I wanted to put it there. So we could put green number 3, blue number 4, and white really very far behind. Like as far as good as black is at number 1, the white one is quite bad. Like it being a 2-mana 2/2 is a real knock against it.
Well, and again, like I was going back, one of our things for that we're going to do for Lords Unlimited, which is the bonus podcast, is one of our worst takes. And I was going back at looking at my card evals, or my top commas that matter, and my rankings of things from the Crash Course. And I had, of all these surveyors, I had the white one in my top 10 comments that matter. And it's by far the worst. You know, there was just so much about the format that was difficult to peg from preview season.
Yeah.
Number 37. There are some annoying inconsistencies in Etherdrift.
But may I take some of these, please?
Please.
Okay. One of my biggest gripes. This is the what grinds my gears segment of Lords of Limited. Not all pilots had the +2 power crew text. Like Deathless Pilot did, but then Skystreak Engineer is a pilot and it didn't. Cloudspire Coordinator, which produces pilot tokens and is a pilot, does not have that text. I hate that. That doesn't make any sense to me. Most things could only target vehicles, but some could target all artifacts. Collision Course is a card about vehicles crashing into each other, but it can just blow up artifacts. But Flood the Engine can only target vehicles. Gastel Blockbuster, you can't sacrifice any artifact. You can only sacrifice a creature or a vehicle, but you can destroy any artifact. That doesn't make any sense to me. That breaks my brain.
I don't feel nearly as strongly about these things as you, but I'm glad that you're fired up about them. It's good TV.
Push the Limit cruise vehicles, but doesn't saddle mounts. Why?
Because the mounts can already attack. Like it needed to crew the vehicles for the card to be functional.
And it saddles mounts. It should do both.
The game's over when you cast Push the Limit, buddy. It doesn't matter. Great.
But just do the thing. I just want you to do the thing. Most payoffs cared about discarding cards, which generally meant you were cycling, so you were also drawing extra cards too. But then randomly, Thopter Fabricator cares about you drawing two cards. That's bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. All right.
I agree. There are some inconsistencies. I'm not as passionate about them as you, but noted.
Okay. I might be on the lookout. This might be a recurring segment in 50 takes.
What grinds my gears?
Number 38, the Golden Egg Award for the common that glues the most archetypes together goes to Starting Column.
Ooh, I love that. You just explained it right in the thing there. That was very smooth.
The Golden Egg, it's named for a card from Throne of Eldraine, a 2-mana artifact, comes into play, you draw a card. You can sacrifice it as food or you can sacrifice it as mana filtering. And it just like did a lot of things. It played in the draw two space, played in Artifacts Matter, played in food, played in fixing. And Starting Column, I think, is a really good recipient for this award as like helped you splash around, start your engines. Once you get to max speed, it also plays in the draw two discard space. Splashing was good. Starting Column's great.
And one of the things we've gotten away from also with this award that was so special about Golden Egg was that you would pick it over cards that were better because it let you delay the decision for where you wanted to end up. And that format rewarded you so much for finding the right monocolor or being heavy monocolor with a splash of a little bit of another color, and Golden Egg then helped fix that splash. But I like where we're at with the Golden Egg Award. Agree. Yeah. Starting Column, worthy choice. Number 39. Monument to Endurance was the best payoff for cycling, and I think massively underappreciated.
Certainly that. We haven't talked about it in a while because I know you drafted a ton of blue-red in the format. I kind of feel like at the end of the day, the other ones fell flat. Like,
I disagree.
So I had a lot of experiences, and maybe this is just a misevaluation on my part or just drafting different decks. I don't know, but like I would have experiences where I thought my Marauding Makos were going to be great in my deck. And then at the end of it felt like, oh, I actually don't have a lot of cycling stuff. And like Magmakin Artillerist, I was never really a fan of.
That card's bad. Format. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I guess I was just like, if Mako or Skyray aren't on turn one or turn two, you can't really cast them.
But they have cycling.
I know. I don't know. I was not, they weren't cards that I was excited about, and I felt like they were too narrow. But again, like I said, maybe that's user error. But my feeling was like Monument to Endurance, yes, I want to do the thing. Most, and I guess Push the Limit is the other best payoff for cycling. And then these cards I don't love.
Sure, but I think Marauding Mako and Scrounging Skyray are just good cards in the blue-red deck. Like if you don't draw them on turn one, you can cycle them away. And maybe juice up your other cycling payoffs. And Captain Howler was nuts also. Yes, I mean, that's got to be the second Howler. Best payoff for cycling.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Blue-red was, I think, had the highest ceiling of all of the decks in the format. Like, a tight blue-red deck had some explosive starts.
Yeah. Number 40, Bounce Off and Defend the Rider are about patience, not tempo. Another not apparent, evident thing for me at the start of the format.
Yeah, I think Bounce Off can be. And well, tempo, this is going to get into a discussion about what is tempo. But like, Defend the Rider is a huge tempo blowout defensively. Like, that's why it's good. Both of them, why they're good, because they're one mana in a format where it's difficult to double spell and you're playing for the late game and people are trading haymakers. And I mean, one mana to interact is gigantic. I think they're different spells, but agree they're both about patience, like defending the rider, sticking it, but landing both of them appropriately because you were patient does give you tons of tempo.
Correct. I think the point I'm trying to make here, and this is again maybe just about my smooth brain when I look at a card like Bounce Off, is I think like at the end of the day you're down a card. But I think what I mean about patience with these is that it's about identifying the turns or the cards that are worth protecting that you never tap out of it for, and like, or that you have to pick your spots for doing. Whereas like, I have seen people do it, and it would be my inclination too to be like, Bounce Off, I will put that in my aggressive blue-red tempo deck and be fine to like use it as a way to just bounce Hazard of the Dunes for my opponent. Haha, I traded four mana for one mana. But you often weren't able to then use that tempo effectively enough because the games went so long. And so
right,
it was
you
about,
couldn't kill them before they got Ketrodon down. And then you were like, well, crap, I still have to deal with Ketrodon and Hazard of the Dunes.
Right. And you're like, and am I going to bounce Ketrodon to like push some more damage? And then you just replay it and gain four again. So like, it was much more about like picking the appropriate spots, like making sure you got your tempo plus, you know, pulling a creature out from under a fight spell or a bite spell, or saving your bomb, than it was about like just, you know, mowing them down for a turn.
Number 41, Earth Rumbler was large and in charge, trivially easy to crew. This was 7/6 power and toughness, trample, vigilance, had leave the graveyard synergy. Some decks just folded to this being on the battlefield. What a card. This, I couldn't find one for the LeBron James award of wire to wire. I think this is a good shout for that.
That's a contender for sure. Speaking of, we got another award coming up. 42, the Imperial Oath Award for clunky looking overperformer goes to, and we might even have to rename the award.
I have to rename the award.
For Thunderhead Gunner. I mean, never has there been a more worthy recipient of the Imperial Oath Award. I'd have to go back and look at all the cards we've given this award to, but I think, yeah.
It's been a stretch for every card after Imperial Oath until
yeah,
Thunderhead this is Gunner.
Truly, yeah. Just clunky looking overperformer. Card rules. It does everything you want in the format.
Speaking of clunky, number 43, that overpriced colorless removal is back with Scrap Compactor.
Yes, I think. And like, I don't know. It's sort of like talking about Siphon Fuel and Crash and Burn, which is in the next point of number 44. Clunky removal is the best it's ever been. You had to be able to get your man. You had to be able to get your Ketrodon off the board. And if Scrap Compactor was your way to do it, Scrap Compactor was your way to do it.
It was really deflating also. And I played a lot of Scrap Compactors, but when my opponents had it, and you just know like the next good thing you play is dying and they're ahead, it's very demoralizing when your opponent's ahead and has a Scrap Compactor on the battlefield. It's very difficult to see a path to getting back into the game.
Well, and there's an effect it has on the game as well, where it hits the battlefield early, and you as the player of Scrap Compactor don't get to see this, but you feel it when you're facing it, is that it kind of makes you play a little differently. You kind of, like, if you have an Earth Rumbler in your hand, then you're like, well, dang, I gotta find something that my opponent thinks is worthy of their Scrap Compactor, so they fire that off first before I land Earth Rumbler, because I know they're definitely going to kill that if they see it and they've got Scrap Compactor in play.
Yeah, and Scrap Compactor definitely best in the artifact decks. Like, you wanted it to be doing things for you as an artifact on the battlefield or triggering things, that sort of stuff. But if you check those boxes, great card.
Mm-hmm.
Number 45, the Aether Spark being an artifact was extremely cool for Limited.
You could tutor it with Transit Mage. Loved doing this.
You could get it back with Tune Up in white.
You could steal it with Trade the Helm. Here's my Grimbauble. I'll take your Planeswalker, please and thank you.
Well, and also good for Limited in the sense that it was not quite as insanely oppressive because all of the cards that could blow up artifacts could just blow up the Aether Spark. So, like, if you had it on time when your opponent cast Aether Spark, they always equip it to a creature first, and then you can trade with it while only being down a plus one counter, which is not the end of the world. Now, if you didn't have the artifact removal on time, you were up a creek without a paddle. But I liked that there were other ways outside of, you know, planeswalkering to interact with this card.
Number 46, Black had so many ways to recur threats if they were sent to the graveyard. This is another reason why Ride's End was so good, is that it had that magical word exile. But, like, we've got Back on Track. We've got Broodheart Engine, another card I definitely wrote off during the crash course. I was like, this is so clunky looking, but Broodheart Engine had its time and was in a great deck. Carrion Cruiser, the 3-mana vehicle to get back artifacts or vehicles or creatures, I should say. And Dune Drifter that just reanimated stuff from the graveyard.
Number 47, for a slow format, there were very few bomb rares that invalidated long games. I think Sabsoon and the Frog God, the most egregious of the bunch, but not to say that there weren't good rares. There were good rares, but you were trading high power leveled cards over the course of the format, and it was really fun playing high powered long games of Magic.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we have, like, you have lists of like five rares that, like, you're like, these, I hated playing against these. These were no fun. Even like Draconautic's Engineer is an excellent card, but like, you could just kill it with Grimbauble or Lightning Strike, or you could just kill the dragon and then all they have is a 3-3. And like, it was deal withable. It's powerful, but not game breaking. Number 48, Thundering Brood Wagon has reach.
I did it. Did you?
Oh, I feel like I attacked into so many things. The thing that Endrider Spikespitter was the thing that my opponents attacked into the most.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Thundering Brood Wagon got me several times. Like, well, you're so used to the giant flashing bow and arrow now. And it's not there until that's a creature.
Correct. Yeah.
Too late. It really does actually have secret reach.
Well, there's just so much, like, Ketrodon. Why Ketrodon and Hazard of the Dunes? Do they both need to have reach? You know?
Like, yes, it made the format more interesting. I think Green's Commons being pushed that much made the format more interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked that it was out of balance the way that it was.
Okay.
Number 49, Engine Rat. We're sorry.
Yeah. We love you. You are a very good card. You're also not.
Let's tone it down.
We're not sorry.
You're
not on our list of top four black commons, right? You're not in
that top five. I would pick Mutant Surveyor over Engine Rat.
I think that's a little crazy, but Engine Rat just does a lot. It trades at the thing. It's a mana sink. But I had a friend of mine who told me that their opponent was at 38. They activated Engine Rat 19 times.
No.
Stop. To win a game.
That's just horrible deck building on both sides. Has to be. There's no way.
Engine Rat's a good card. And we're sorry that we missed you. And we're excited to get to draft you again. And number 50, Aether Drift may not be an all-timer, but we'd happily take it for another spin around the block.
Yeah, I really liked Aether Drift. I enjoyed the different speed of the format comparatively from the last few years. I enjoyed the card evaluation surprises that it provided. And I also enjoyed the metagame shifts as they happened, thanks to, I think, it being out of balance. Like, the out of balance formats are more prone to those types of clear metagame shifts. And I enjoyed the stages of Aether Drift. Would happily draft again.
Yeah, I think I will be looking for, it will be one of those when it comes to Flashback that I'll be like, oh yeah, I'll check that out. I'd do that over Vintage Cube.
I'm kind of coming around to your point of view that Flashbacks are overrated.
Oh, they're definitely overrated. But like, I guess I more so mean that, and this is going to be, I think, indicative, or this will be our situation with a lot of formats now, if we're getting them spaced out evenly, is that will hopefully feel like, gone too soon a little bit. Like, I would still happily fight. I think that's the metric for me, is like, if I'm sitting around watching TV on a Tuesday night, am I also happy to fire up a draft on my phone? And I would say for Aether Drift, the answer is yes. For some formats past, the answer has been no. So that's a big plus in the pro category for the pro column for Etherdrift for me.
Yeah, I feel very similarly about it. Loved Etherdrift. And on that note, I think great place to send us out. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. Links to our tier lists. Speaking of flashbacks, we've got a whole doc of all of our tier lists of formats past since we've been doing the tier lists. So if there are flashbacks and you want to get a quick hit, maybe you don't have time to listen to the 50 takes episode for the format, and you want to go check out the tier list, those are up there for you. We've got access to our merch. Like we said, we've got our new Dashery store over there. So lordslimited.com/merch. We've got our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively. All of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.